C1PR. Number 14B.
Where everything I speak and act and live and say and feel and do and hope and cherish and so on, that through all those sounds through the principle of prayer, that through all that sounds the desire to know God, that through all that sounds the second prayer to express that desire in words and deeds and acts and living and feelings and so on, that the whole third prayer of reformation, which is based on rebuking sin, sounds through everything in me, through my speech and action and so on, so that everything in me is in conformity with one prayer. And only on that ground have we a whole personality. When we don't have that one prayer in us, which sounds through every detail of our personality, then we have a split personality. Then we belong to that category which gets greater and greater in percentage, which are called schizophrenia. Schizophrenia. Is that better? But everybody understands me. All right, that's the main thing. Now, the fourth prayer is that prayer of the whole personality, where it brings us through the first three prayers, and I pointed out, it brings us only through the first three prayers into that state of prayerful principle attitude in which we have no more a split personality, where we don't say what we don't think, where we don't live what we don't desire, where we don't show forth openly what we inwardly don't love and think and mean. Can you see the tone?
Yes.
Where there is complete conformity, and in every subtone we have that conformity, conformity of every phase of all the detail of a personality conformed with one big tone, the tone of mind, the prayer of spirit, and the prayer of soul as one attitude, a principled attitude. And that principled attitude, that's the fourth prayer, that's prayer. To have a principled attitude is prayer. Because then if we have a principled attitude, then every phase of our being is focused on one principle, is lined up to one principle, is inspired by one principle, is operated and enacted and impelled and propelled by one principle. And then it's one coherent whole. That's principle. Then we have the first slight sense of what it means that principle is reduced to system. Then in prayer, that big, wonderful statement is shown that the principle of prayer is reduced to a principled, prayerful attitude, where every phase of that principled attitude is so related that it is always expressing one thing, the principled prayer, the principle of prayer. Well, perhaps it sounds a bit Chinese, I don't know, but it just takes some thinking over. And after 8 weeks, when we have tried to think it over and have begun to see the beauty of it and begin to feel the power of it and the harmony that comes with it, the balance that comes with it in our own life, then we can speak again about it and we will understand each other on the level of spiritual language much better, because then each one has spoken that spiritual language for himself. Now, I have such a lot of notes which I can't take. Let us just try first and go through the text and see how she always falls back to the three first prayers. And taking those together, it's a principal prayer. But she always points out that if those three don't coincide, that we don't have a principal prayer and that we are in danger, and that it makes us a hypocrite. She says, it begins with principle as mind, which my caption for it is, and I say my because you can have another, and I will have another in a few months' time, which I try to say that honest desire is prayer. That if, you see, I begin with desire, because that mind, the prayer of mind comes now and says, but that prayer of mind which we have known as desire must be an honest desire, must not be a desire which is superficial, which I say I desire and I don't mean it, and so on. You see, it must be an honest, it must be a principled desire, it must be a desire which just sounds through everything in me, not only through my words, but through my heart, my intentions, and my love, and my actions, everything. Then it's principled. She says, for instance, the danger from prayer is that it may lead us into temptation. By it we may become involuntary hypocrites. But how and why? Well, she gives it. She says, because we utter desires. You see, the desire is all right. We utter a desire, but that desire is not coupled with the second and the third. It stands alone, which is not real. You see, it hasn't a second tone of reality, of substantiality of the desire. It hasn't been substantiated, which is not real. And third, she says, it lacks the third. And consoling ourselves in the midst of sin with the recollection that we have prayed over it or mean to ask forgiveness at some later date. So you can see she takes and defines hypocrisy, which is the counterfeit of honesty, of the false tone, and says, what makes it? Well, she says, the desire may be there, but the desire alone isn't yet principled unless it is coupled with the second and third, unless it is coupled with the substantialization of that desire, if it's real then. And third, it must be coupled with the sinlessness of that desire, and not with the sinfulness of that desire which says, I desire it, but I'm not going to do it. I desire it, but I'm going to sin. But if I have sinned, I come back and desire again sinlessness. And I console myself that I shall desire sinlessness afterwards. See, it's no strictness of it. So, let's see how, can you see that? How that prayer, that the first three subjects must be one tone, one attitude in order to be honest, and therefore not fatal to us. And so, here the focal point is on desire, in the first subtone, on desire, and said, that desire must be principled, and it is only principled if that desire is real, and if that desire is sinless. If that desire is only uttering, therefore superficial, unsubstantial, and coupled with going round the rule of soul, by evading the rule of soul, then it is hypocrisy. Then it is not one principled prayer, and therefore fatal. Yeah, let's go right through the second, through principle as spirit. There, it's a rather long passage. It takes two paragraphs, and perhaps I'm not going to read it, but perhaps I just take out a few references out of it to pinpoint the whole thing. The epitome which I have given here is that honest expression is prayer. See, in mind, I termed it and said, honest desire is prayer. Now, in spirit, we have always the expression, the substantialization of the desire. So I said, an honest expression, inward and outward coincidence of expression. Inward and outward conformity of the desire. That's the expression. That's the substantialization of it. That must be honest, too. Because here she points out that so often in a wrong sense of prayer, in a superficial, insubstantial sense of prayer, there is not such a conformity of the inward with the expression of the inward. that the outward always appears to be different than the inward really is. She says that prayers which do not correspond with their characters. See, the inward and the outward, the spoken and the inward do not correspond. Therefore, the expression is not honest. Or she says, there are prayers which are likened unto whited sepulchres, full of all uncleanness, or uncleanness. They are white, they appear to be pure, but inwardly they are impure. Can you see the impurity of it, which always comes out? The non-conformity of the inward and the outward, the appearing and that which lies beneath. She speaks here of the false sense of prayer if a man, though apparently fervent and prayerful, is impure and therefore insincere, what must be the comment upon him? See, it appears to be firm, but inwardly it is insincere. No conformity. Or she says of this sense of wrong prayer, praying for humility with whatever fervency of expression does not always mean a desire for it. See, the inward desire may not be the same as what it appears outwardly. Well, when you read it through, you will just notice how here in the second stone is shown the discrepancy of the inward state and the outward expression. It is also, you can find out a lot of this sense of hiding and pretending and feigning, that a wrong sense of prayer is always trying to hide the inward and show forth something which is absolutely the contrary of the inward. That we seek to hide their wickedness, to hold secret fellowship with sin, to try to deceive ourselves and others. That audible prayers and profession cover the multitude of sins. They hide it, you see. We are not willing to have our neighbors see how wicked our heart is. You see, it's again hiding. Now, you get the rhythm of it, you see. So, on what we have seen up to now, what is the prayer of honesty here? The prayer of honesty would say that the outward expression and the inward a desire and attitude in an honest prayer must be conformed, that it must not be in non-conformity. There must be no gap and contradiction in it. Now, let's see how she expresses how an honest expression of prayer must always be a coupling together of the first, second and third prayer. Here it's the subtone of spirit, and therefore she focuses the tone of spirit, namely on the expression. You see, that the expression must be honest. First we had that the inward desire must be honest. Now comes spirit and says the expression of it must be honest. The substantialization of it must be honest. And so she says, and that must conform with the first prayer, namely, it must conform with our real desires and with the words which we speak about these desires. And so it must substantialize the desire. And also, she says in this paragraph, it must be coupled and conform with the feeling. You get now the third, with the spiritual sense of the prayer, with the feeling of the desire. Again, let's see again what she says. The side note is aspiration and love. Now we had that aspiration and love, that adoration and love, that gratitude, humility, meekness, and all those spiritual qualities in the second prayer. Now she says, in order that the second prayer can be called an honest prayer, it must be coupled with the first prayer. Namely, it must be coupled with a desire. And she speaks there about the desire for it. And also, she says, that aspiration and love must also be coupled with soul, namely, with the humility of that prayer. We get the sense of soul. And then she says, if that is coupled together, that God accepts, then it is provable, then it is efficacious, then it has spiritual power, then it works in us. So you, can you see the tone of it? Well, doesn't matter if you see it right now. We have time. It's quite enough that our thought awakens to it and awakens to it. Because the beauty of it is wonderful and the practicability of it is wonderful. It just tells us we can't just start and take a principled attitude if that principled attitude is not the outgrowth of an inward rebirth. If we take just try to take a principled attitude, it is an adopted child. It is taking another attitude which we have adopted somehow from a theory or somehow from somebody who has told us to take that attitude. And she says, and that's very dangerous. That is very dangerous. That can lead us into temptation and it can be very fatal. But the true principled attitude, she says, is that when everything in you is just pronouncing and exhibiting the atmosphere of the first, second, and third attitude of prayer. Here it is saying, well, all that we express in life, all that we express in life, be it in words, in deeds, in acts, and so on, must always be coupled with the desire of the first subject, the desire to know God as He is, with an earnest desire to know God as He is. And it must always be coupled with the third, with that humility and willingness to change and to reform, and to be willing to reform, and to be willing to different, and to accept the rule of soul as the rule of soul is. Then the expression of us is always principled and therefore honest. So we go to the third tone of principle as soul, which I tried to epitomize as honest self-rectification is prayer. Honest self-rectification is prayer. Or an honest prayer requires self-examination. Honest prayer is that prayer which is willing to see things as they are, to examine ourselves as we really are, and not as we think we are, or as we would like we would be, or as we try to be but aren't. It is an honest investigation. It is, she says, we should examine ourselves and learn what is the affection and purpose of our heart. For in this way only can we learn what we honestly are. Now, let's see how she again here epitomizes this combination of the first three subjects as one prayer. It is honest self-examination, honestly knowing what we are. Can you hear the tone of soul as principle? I hope the tones of the synonyms are so clear to you that you see at once that it has to do with honesty as principle. What we really are is a real identification, principle as soul. Now, what does it mean to have such honest self-identification and self-examination? Well, she says, the main tone here is focused on soul, you see, to find out how sinless or how much sinless we are. That's the point. But how we can honestly find out how much we are? She says, only if it is coupled with mind and spirit, namely with the willingness to learn what we honestly are. With the willingness to learn, it's a mental attitude. And second with spirit, and if we are really inwardly grateful for every merited rebuke. That we are really grateful if sin is rebuked and sinlessness is established. The moment we are not grateful for sin which is rebuked in us, we show that we are thoroughly personal and that we don't like sinlessness. that we make sin personal, but in the third subject it has been shown that sin is not personal, that Jesus identified sin with the devil and with Satan and never with men. And so if that is not established in ourselves, we are never grateful for rebuke. We are always shocked and hurt by it. So she says, it is in order to have a real principled self-examination of ourselves, our whole mentality, mind, must be willing to accept that self-examination, and it must be coupled with spirit, with the gratitude for every sin that is rebuked, and with the gratitude for every sinlessness that is shown forth in me. She also shows the counterfeit of it, the personal attitude, and says, well, what is the personal attitude? It's again the counterfeit of soul, which says, I'm glad that I'm not as other men are. See, that's the counterfeit of self-examination. It's that a sense of superiority which says, I'm glad I'm not like the other men are. And she says, well, that is so because that sense is coupled with a false sense of mind. We do not listen to the rebuke. You see, our ears are shut, our desires are shut, our mentality is shut. We do not listen to it. And because it's not coupled with a true sense of spirit, because we just give thanks, you see, not grateful, just give thanks that we are not like the other men are. So here she gives the counterfeit of the 1, 2, 3. She says the counterfeit of the one of mind is that our mentality is shut, we don't listen. Second, our mentality is a superficial gratitude, which is just giving thanks. For what? For a false sense of soul, that we are not as bad as the other men are. And that together, she says, that's the dishonesty of it. You have in this very short paragraph two times, once in the positive, once in the negative, a summary that honesty is just a combination of the 1 and 2 and 3, and that dishonesty is a combination of the false sense of the 1 and false sense of the 2 and the false sense of the 4. Which just shows us that we find our true principled attitude only as we embody, as we incorporate, as we spiritually personify the first prayer, the second prayer, the third prayer. Then that prayer is principled. Then it has, it's a principled prayer. Then the principles of prayer and my prayer is one. Then the principle of prayer and my principled prayer is one. And we get the first statement of that high, wonderful, metaphysical statement in the recapitulation of principle and idea is one. Here, she can't say principle and idea is one. The beginner couldn't fathom it, wouldn't know what to do with it. Here she presents it in that tender way, loving way, and says, well, I just show you how you are principled, what the principled prayer is, and that principled prayer is one with the principle of prayer, and therefore it is efficacious. Therefore, that prayer is accepted of God, she says in this prayer. That's accepted of God. That finds its demonstration. And then the fourth subtone, principle as principle, I epitomize as the test of honest prayer is unselfishness. Now we come to the test of the prayer. Principle always proves itself. So here in prayer we come and say, how can I prove, how can I test if I have followed the law and the order and the rule of prayer, so that I have become a new personality, a personality through which all the qualities of the first three prayers sound through. And she gives us the test. She says, The test of it is if you have become impersonal, selfless, unselfishness, which is another term for sense. Now the test in it is, are you still personally praying, or has your prayer become a principled prayer, and therefore all that really prays to God is no more you, but a prayerful attitude. Really not we as a person can pray to God. God wouldn't hear a single thing what we pray, but the principled attitude that God hears. Because it is of the same nature as principle. That's the wonderful point of it, in it is that we can say, well, as a person, I have done in my life so many wrong things. As a person, I have been so rotten in my life. But there is a salvation, and that salvation is scientific and it's principle. I can start it right now without having to fall back on how good and bad I have been in my life. All that God hears is now what is now, at this moment, my inward attitude. If that inward attitude corresponds with the principle of prayer, then my inward attitude is principally praying, is praying in a principled way, and that God accepts, that God hears. So here we find that the test of prayer, she says, is how much we have become unselfish or impersonal. Here again, we find the summary of the first three prayers into one. Because here she speaks about asking. That prayer is an asking, a petitioning. And then she says, but is that asking coupled with giving evidence of this request? See, it's not only praying, not only desiring. She says, do we give evidence? Now we have spirit. Spirit always substantiates, expresses always the desire, must give expression to the desire. And then third, she says, and are we pursuing selflessness? And are we taking up the cross? Or are we pursuing still unselfishness? See, now we get to pursuing it. Do we stick to the unselfishness? Then we are doing right. Then we live consistently with our prayer. You see, then we live consistently. Consistently means conformable. We live conformably to our prayer. See, she says, therein lies the proof that we have a principled prayer where we are free from personal self if first our desire and asking and petitions are in conformity with the expression of this asking and petition and praying. And if this expression of praying and petitioning is also in conformity with the third, namely with the sense of pursuing and sticking to the selflessness, to the Christ-selfhood. Then, as we do that, we have a Christ-selfhood, and that is impersonal. That's a new personality, a Christ personality, which is unselfish, where we say we can love the neighbor as oneself, because there is no more a person as neighbor and a person as I, where there is only one personality, and that's that personality which sounds through every phase of our being. Well, this afternoon we will go on with the next stone.